Okay, so to begin our Sunday Hanukkah sessions as we approach the Festival of Lights, I wanted to consider a general topic that is one, it's not really in the Gemara per se, but it's one that could lurk behind a lot of issues in Hanukkah, and therefore especially as we'll presumably only have time to talk about a few topics for Hanukkah, should try to pick a topic that's very general and that addresses a lot of other topics at once. And also, as we're learning Sukkah, so it comes off of a Gemara Masechta Sukkah, and also one that directly segues from topics we've been recently talking about. So it seemed like a decent choice. Do you agree? Okay, so we'll see how many topics we get to talk about. But this Mar Malkum, we've had a chance to see, it wasn't a whole lot, that the Gemara in Masechta Sukkah and Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph tells us about a few things related to Hanukkah. And what I'm most interested in is a topic which is not explicit, but maybe is hinted at by Tosfos. Because there is a question that is discussed really in the later Svarim. Rabbi Bleich Shlita in his Sefer B'Nesifas HaHalacha, he says that this is not discussed in the earlier Svarim until you get to the Sfas Emes. He knows everything, so we have to trust that that's probably true. It's one that, as we'll see, is kind of right below the surface in some Rishonim. But the question is, essentially, how do we characterize the mitzvah of Hanukkah? Is the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah a obligation like every other obligation where it devolves on the individual, what we would call a chovas gavra, which is really the default assumption for mitzvos in general? Is that what we're talking about? Or should we assume that there is another possibility here? What's the other possibility, would you say, if it's not really about an individual? Where else would we find the mitzvah of Hanukkah directed to?
A house.
Tzibur. Sorry?
Tzibur.
Tzibur in general is a possibility, right? Like we talk about Kriyas HaTorah, so when we have things like that, that are Chovos HaTzibur or Karbanos and the like, so that is often a other option other than the individual. But here I'm going to go with what Jacob is pointing to, the possibility that maybe it is a chov on the bias. So what indications do you see that that might be true? Okay, so one is the first line in the Gemara, not the first line in the Gemara about, you know, the sugyas of Hanukkah appear in the second part of Masech HaShabbos. It's the first line is not the first line, meaning that the sugya of Hanukkah kind of backs into Hanukkah, so there are sugyas about Hanukkah that start off. And then, after a little bit, then the Gemara takes a step back and says, hold on, what is Hanukkah? So, as it talks about that, it actually does it twice, really. So, alright, not the first line, but a line in the Gemara about Hanukkah. The Gemara says, Mitzvah's Hanukkah, Ner Ish Ubeso. So, already you see the household thrown into the mix. That bias, by the way, that phrase refers to the Ikra Mitzvah, as we know. Maybe we'll have a chance to discuss in greater detail. Hanukkah manifests itself in the Gemara on three levels. We are currently practicing what's known as the Mahadran, Min HaMahadran, but the Gemara says that the most basic obligation of Hanukkah is Ner Yishu Beso. So Jacob's saying, it's interesting, there's that word Beso thrown into the formulation. Maybe it's really a Chiyuv on the bias. Any other indications? So one way or another, it could be counterindications also. Yes, Harrison?
Are we designated like a certain spot in the house for the mitzvah to take place?
Okay, I'm going to take that and tweak it a little bit. I mean, you're right. But the idea that there is clearly some geographical considerations or some place-related considerations that affect Ner Hanukkah, and it's not something you can simply do anywhere. So that is something that's worth noting. Jacob?
There's the discussion in Gemara about if you have your house opens to two different places in your Shirah Rabin, mm-hmm, or something of that nature, then you might have to put candles on both sides.
Okay, so you're referring to the Sugya of Chashad. where the Gemara says if you have two doors and people won't know necessarily what is your main door, so then you need to have a menorah on both sides, which suggests again that location plays a big role here. Okay, any other indications one way or another? Any other thoughts? So let's focus, we haven't seen anything yet, but just we want to know what we're looking for, and specifically because, again, this is a concept which we're telling you that the Gemara is not going to tackle straight head on, so we need to know what to have our sensors out for. So these examples that we just heard in the past few minutes, are they all pointed in the direction to place and maybe bias being significant? Even if we accept all that, is the only way to read that as Hanukkah is a Chovas HaBayis? Or is there any other way to read it?
We can read it as a Chovas HaBayis is Motzi, the individual in the house. There it is a Chovas.
Okay. That's a formulation that could be also. Any other formulations one could have?
There's two aspects.
Okay, that could be too. Very good. Right, could be there are two aspects. But even this one aspect, I mean, you're right that that's one thing we have to keep our eye out for, and that's something that some have theorized. But any other aspects that you could note here? Or any other possibilities? Well, what if we said, like some suggest, that all of this attention on the location doesn't mean that the location has the chiyuv. Still a mitzvah on the individual. It's just a mitzvah that requires, is that what you said?
Prisma Nisa
is definitely something to keep an eye out for too. But how's that going to affect this issue?
The location is specific for the house. The location is needed for a practical reason.
To be a fire center. Okay, so that's something we have to figure out also. It's maybe closer to what actually Harrison was bringing up when he talked about locations within the house. Right? That we know that Persume Nisa is something which also affects the conditions of Hanukkah. So is that why we care about place? Only because of Persume Nisa? Or is there something which a little bit more. So that's something we have to figure out. It could be that what Harrison said before about places within the house, you know, that was simply about figuring out where is it going to have Pearson, where is it going to get people's attention. But maybe that's not necessarily connected to the notion of location. But part of why Gil, I'm giving you a little bit of a hard time here, is because, let's say somebody were to go into the middle of Times Square, with all due appreciation to Chabad, and say, like, on a personal level, let's say somebody were to go in the middle of Times Square and decide to plant his menorah there. So there you have Pirsum Shein Kamo, right? But would he be Yosei Mitzvah of Hanukkah there? Presumably not. So it sounds like the location consideration is not only about Pirsum. But still, we could ask, is the notion that there is a location, maybe that just means that it's still a chovas hagavra, it's still a mitzvah on you. The question is just, how do you fulfill it? And the answer is meant to be that you need a physical venue, you need a location that's yours in order to fulfill it. Harrison?
You said the chovas habayis and the and that since you have to do the mitzvah within your own dwelling, within, like, because of, due to that, it's a chovas hagavra, and that it's still like, it's not necessarily a chovas hagavra, but it's just, it's like, it's so much a chovas hagavra, you have to do it in your own house.
Could you explain more?
Not yet.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but maybe it will become clear. Okay, so to take the portal through our Masech, the Masech HaSukkah. So on Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph, so the Gemara brings up a topic which we are quite familiar with now from our recent investigations. But the Gemara says this is about 2/3 of the way down the page. The Amar of Chia Bar Ashi, Amarav, Hamadlik Ner Shal Chanukah Tzarech Levarach. Okay, you're going to light Chanukah candles, you have to make a brach. Revere me, Amar Haraya Ner Shal Chanukah Tzarech Levarach. That somebody who sees Ner Chanukah has to make a brach. So, my Mavarach, what taka does he say? Amar of Yehuda, Yom Rishon, Hamadlik Mavarach Shalosh. First day, a person who's lighting makes three brachos. Haroe mevarach shtayim. Somebody who sees the candle, remakes two brachos. Mekam de'elech, madlech mevarach shtayim, v'ro mevarach achas. And after the first night, the one actually lighting makes two, and the one who sees makes one. V'may mevarach, what is the bracha? Shekidshanim esveisav tzivano lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. Oh, what? Kidshanim esveisav tzivano ve'heichon tzivano. Where in the world do we see such an obligation? Answer is, mi loy soser, because the Torah says lo soser. V'mnach b'yitz chamar, sh'al avicha v'yageicha. He gives his alternate source that it is from Hazinu. Okay.
How does that pasuk answer the question?
It could be that the notion that we should turn to the Chachamim for guidance on how to do things, and as some suggest, particularly how to commemorate history. Maybe that's specifically the reference here. So all of that is a part of teaching us that we need to have hanhagas for things like Hanukkah. Okay, so Lasasa, again, that brings us into familiar territory that we're all familiar with from our recent sugyas. But this idea of Brichas HaRoeh, right? So Brichas HaRoeh, you might say, wait a minute, how come no one ever taught me about this in elementary school? Right? Chanukah is always something we learn about in school from our earliest ages. Anyone ever learn about Brichas HaRoeh in elementary school? Later than elementary school? At any point? Anyone ever teach you about Brichas HaRoeh? So why not? Why is that left out of the teaching of Hilchos Chanukah? So Rashi gives you a little bit of a hint. Rashi says, "Koy al shloi hidlik bebeso." We're talking about somebody who has not lit on his own. Be over Bershus Rabim, and he happens to be traveling outside. Veroa osav pischei Yisrael, and he happens to see a candle in somebody else's window, she'en mitzvah laniach bePesach, because that's where it should be, tzarech levarech al ha'rishona. So then that person has to make a bracha. So the Bach fills in the word, here was a min al-rishona, the Bach fills in, al-ri'iya ha'rishona. First time you see it, that's how you have to make a bracha. So they said this is a little bit of a hint, because maybe this doesn't come up for you because you light the candle before you see anyone else's candle, perhaps. But they'll say, wait a minute, not always. So even though Rashi doesn't say it like this way, many other Rishonim say, and this is how we seem to assume, that it's not only somebody who has already, who's not going to make a bracha on seeing a candle, but also someone who will be lighting it all. So even if you see other people's candles before your own candle, you still don't make the bracha Brichas HaRoeh. So nowadays, this halacha has very little application. So that's why you don't get taught about it in school, because it doesn't really come up. It's not really something that we actually have to do. But Tosfos has a question from a different angle. Tosfos says, okay, they taught me, they didn't teach me, it comes up, doesn't come up. Why is there such a concept? Why is there such an idea as Brichas HaRoeh? So you see the last Tosfos in the page. You guys saw this, this Tosfos? The last Tosfos in the page says, B'shar mitzvos kigon alulav v'tzuka loytakinu l'varach HaRoeh. Right? Very suspicious that here we're jealous on behalf of Masach HaSukkah because we have a lulav and sukkah and there is no Brichas HaRoeh even theoretically. So why is Chanukah candle different? The truth is, you might say, well, I know the difference. Difference is pretty glaring. What do you think is the difference? Yeah, Pursume Nisa, right? That should be the difference. That Chanukah, the mitzvah, is about advertising. So when you participate in this process, maybe there's a bracha to make. When it comes to other mitzvahs, so lulav and sukkah, that's not necessarily the theme. So why would I assume that and make a bracha on other mitzvot so that they should be equally bracha-able, just like Ner Chanukah is. So some Achronim address that premise. And they suggest that Persumei Nisa is really a chiyuv on the one lighting. So, as much as that concept may affect how you do it, right? And that's something that's already been brought up today, that the directive of Persumei Nisa may influence how exactly you're going to light the candles. But it doesn't place a mitzvah on the witness. So to say that the witness should make a bracha, that's not necessarily something that emerges obviously from the concept of Persumei Nisa. Okay, so let's assume that that's not the answer. And therefore we have to observe and comment on the fact that Ner Chanukah has this concept of Birchas HaRoeh, and other mitzvahs don't. So Tosfos has two answers. The first answer is Mishum Chavivus HaNes. Now you could have said, okay, well that's actually the answer to the Persumei Nisa point also. That's what Tosfos means by this answer. It's a way of saying Mishum Pirsum HaNes. That's why there's a bracha here. But it's not his language. It's a little bit less likely that's really the answer. Sounds like Tosfos is really emphasizing the chavivus, that there is something special, something extra appreciated about Ner Chanukah, and therefore that's what's justifying an extra bracha. But in any event, that's only the first answer. What's the second answer of Tosfos? Mishum sheyesh kama b'nei adam, because there are some people Shein lahem batim. They don't have houses. V'ein b'yodom. The Kayyid. It's not in their hands. It's not in their ability to fulfill the mitzvah. So that's very interesting, right? What does that seem to say to us? Gilad?
That's a question.
Yes, okay.
If you don't have a house, you're not supposed to let it all.
So that's the question. What exactly is the suggestion here? That's... is telling us something interesting here, right? That there seems to be a household qualification, and we have to figure out what that means. Now, is Tosfos in this answer saying that it's a chovas habayis? What else could Tosfos be saying? The chovah that needs a bias, that we're saying? Okay, that's a little bit of a loaded phrase. So that's...
a requirement for
the... Okay, so you know, it could be that this is just something that we need in order to fulfill the mitzvah, but the chiyuv is still on the individual. So Tosfos, just to read another few words, Tosfos says, I actually like the first answer better. V'tam rishon nicha d'lai tikshulei mezuzah. That you could ask from Zuzo. What does Tosfos mean by that?
Why a homeless person would make a bracha on seeing the Zuzo? Could that be the same type of rationale?
Okay, but just to I think, say it backwards, it'll be a little clearer. That one could draw a parallel between the Zuzo and Ner Chanukah, perhaps. Right? They're both mitzvos which are fulfilled through having a residence. So if the whole issue is that, oh no, there's no residence, how are you going to fulfill the mitzvah? So then we'll get you involved instead through looking at it. So why doesn't anyone say that by mezuzah? Let's say somebody doesn't have an opportunity to put up a mezuzah, he doesn't have a residence to call his own, but not even a rental. So why don't we say for that person also, let's be misakin, that every time you see a mezuzah, you should make a bracha, which is going to become pretty unwieldy, and the details of what exactly that's going to involve would be a lot to figure out. But okay, but just conceptually, why isn't there something like that? So Tosfos says, yeah, that's a question you want to avoid because they seem to not be sure what the answer would be. So therefore, the first answer is better. there's a lot, if you really sit on this Tosfos, there's a lot to try to figure out. There's a lot that's very interesting in terms of what this Tosfos seems to be suggesting. The grouping of mezuzah and Chanukah is itself interesting. You do see, on the one hand, the connection between the two. And the Gemara does say also in Masechet Shabbos that ideally, the way it used to be, you could have mezuzah and menorah on opposite sides of your door, so people will come in and be surrounded by the mitzvos. But it's interesting that, as far as I'm aware, that I've, Baruch Hashem, been exposed to many svarim on Chanukah and the like, and I think going back from the codifications of the Rishonim all the way to svarim that are published nowadays, I'm only aware of one sefer that specifically treats Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Mezuzah together as one unit. And that is a sefer by the great Rabbi Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy. If you're familiar with that name, he wrote the sefer Pisrei Choshen, which is a multi-volume work on Choshen Mishpat, as well as a number of other halachas svarim. Has a very organized, systematic approach to halacha. He passed away just a few years ago. So he also wrote a sefer on ribbis, and he wrote a sefer on challah, a sefer on shatnez. He has a lot of different halachic volumes. It's a sefer on erubin. So he has a one sefer, relatively small, thin sefer on mezuzah and ner Chanukah. So that's the only sefer that I'm aware of that specifically treats those two topics together, only those two topics, and nothing else as one unit. And that sefer is called Chovas Hador. So you might think, okay, that's a pun, Chovas Hador. It could have worked. But he means Dor, Dalet Reish, the resident, the obligations that are upon the resident. That's what he deals with in that sefer about mezuzah and Ner Chanukah. I did see a sefer once. I noticed it once in the store. I haven't really seen it since. But a sefer on Hilchos Mezuzah that the title actually is a pun, and it only works for Ashkenazim. No offense, but the title of the sefer was Chukas HaPesach, not Pesach like Yatif, but Pesach of Pei Sof Ches. So the Sfarim are looking at this and saying, Chukat HaPetach, what is that going to do with anything? But it seems to be a pun on Pesach. But in any event, so that title is a pun, somewhat discriminatory pun, I'm sorry. But the Chovas Hador, that's not a pun, just happens to overlap with the English usage. It means a resident. So a resident in a house has an obligation of mezuzah and an obligation of Ner Chanukah. Now, that being the case, they're still probably quite different from each other. And if you think about it, we'll see how much we can look at this, that it could be that there are strong distinctions to be drawn between Chanukah and Mezuzah, even if they ostensibly share this link. So, in any event, there is a lot of attention paid to this Tosfos as part of the discussion. Is Tosfos telling us that a bias is so crucial to Ner Chanukah that that shows us it's really a Chovas HaBayis. Now, it's hard to hang too much on this Tosfos because, first of all, as we see, even that line can be read two ways. Either to say that it's a Chovas HaBayis or that it is a chiyuv on the individual that has a need for a bias. But despite that, in addition to the fact that that line is open to interpretation, it's also only one answer in Tosfos, and Tosfos says we're not so happy with that answer. So it's hard to draft this Tosfos to the cause of Chovas HaBayis with too much enthusiasm. But it's definitely a big part of the discussion. So what do you think about this question? What halachic issues would be affected? So before, I was asking you to bring some proofs that a bias is a part of the conversation. So now let's try to move that to the next stage. What halachic issues would be affected, or do you think have been affected, by the possible need for a bias? thoughts? Harrison, you think like you might want to say something?
No, hold
on. So close.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, if we say that bias is either the mechuyav in Chanukah, that it's a chobos of bias, or that we say that you need a bias to fulfill Ner Chanukah, what nafkaminas would that have? How would that affect the halacha, or perhaps how has that already affected the halacha in ways that you might have noticed? Jacob?
When you go to someone else's house for a meal on Chanukah, should you light there or should you light in your own house?
Okay, right. So one question is, are you able to light outside your house? And if so, what are the requirements to get into somebody else's house? Yeah, what else? False alarm too. Okay.
What do dormers do?
Oh, what do dormers do? Anyone know any? Right, so where to light in a dormitory? The topic is not at all controversial. but there is a extensive literature about where to light in a theoretical yeshiva where somebody might theoretically be, where they theoretically have different life functions taking place in scattered places. So how does that affect the mitzvah? And as you probably are aware, in a hugely controversial way. Right? So what, I mean, just without going into the whole sugya, but there were those who felt that the cafeteria would be the place to do it. It's a minority view among the poskim. Others who felt that the dormitory would be the place to do it. That's a more popular view among poskim, but is also a less popular view among administrators. As you can understand why, it's tack, it's nothing to joke about. It's very dangerous. So are there any other possibilities? Is there any other issue here? Then there is a question of whether the lobby qualifies. So all of this revolves around the point that, like we said before about Times Square, it doesn't seem like you can just plant your menorah anywhere, at least according to the vast majority of poskim. I don't want to say that no one says this, but it seems for the most part that you can't just plant your menorah anywhere, that there is a specific locational need, and therefore we have to figure out what qualifies. So when you look at a yeshiva setting, for example, so then you have to figure out what is going to work as a possible venue for lighting menorah. Is there a hierarchy of possibilities? Are there only a few possibilities on one possibility? So all of that's a big machlokas. But again, what's the opening premise? The opening premise is that location, location, location may not be the three biggest rules in Chanukah, like real estate, but it's at least one of them. Yes, sir?
How many per house you have to light?
Okay, so how many per house? And that you're saying, because the Gemara does start off that discussion, says at least as far as the Iker mitzvah is concerned, the answer is one. Okay, any other issues that come to mind that you think might be affected by this? Nothing else?
What if you're on a boat?
Oh! So why would you be on a boat? So I was going to actually, I was actually thinking about airplanes. But yeah, you can go with boats. It'll take you much, it'll take you much longer, but feel free. So in terms of airplanes, bottom line, or top line, do not try it away from home. Do not light menorahs on airplanes. That is definitely the takeaway when you're away from home. However, that's a shtickle of discussion. And there is a literature about it. I would stick with the position of Rav Asher Weiss Shlita that one should not light a menorah on an airplane for three reasons.
Number three.
Sorry?
Number three?
You don't need three. One would be enough, but three reasons help to hit the point home. So one is that it says you wouldn't even be Yotze anyway. One reason you wouldn't be Yotze, and this is a whole sugya, maybe we'll have time to get into, but if not, we'll just borrow from it for a moment now, that it's true, the Gemara says, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, Kavsa Lezakakla, it's not focused on the Gemara, but we paskin Kavsa Lezakakla, you know what that means? It means that if the candle goes out, you're not required to relight it. Okay. However, we also know that, also machlokes the Gemara, but the way we conclude is that there is a minimal shear of shemen, of oil or of wicks, if we're talking about candles, there is a minimal shear for how much a menorah has to have. And the assumption is that it has to start off with the potential that it could last the required time, which we assume nowadays is a half hour. So it has to have the potential of lasting a half hour. If it could physically last that long, but circumstances intervene and it doesn't last that long, okay, so then that's not your problem. But you have to start with a candle that, based on the laws of physics, could last that long. Now you'll say, well, it's ironic because the whole point of Hanukkah is that they started with a candle that could not last that long and they went the other way. Okay, that's a different discussion. Right, but for us, we're supposed to use kind of like the exact opposite of the Nes Chanukah, that we're supposed to use a candle that could last all the requisite time. And if it doesn't, fine. If it doesn't, that's not our problem. However, what if the issue is not that it doesn't have enough oil? It has enough oil. But there are other reasons why you're not anticipating where it's going. You want to comment? Okay. So let's say, in a couple levels you have to say here. Let's say, even though it has enough oil, there's an external reason why it's physically impossible for this candle to make the duration. What's an example of that? Let's say it's extremely windy outside. So you're lighting outside, for example. So you know that there's no chance this candle is going to last more than a few minutes. As soon as you light it, the wind is going to come and blow it out. So many assume that that is comparable to not having enough oil. Kavsol zakuklo, fine, but you have to have potential. And here, that's not called potential. That's a chiddush, because you would say, especially if you want to be very brisker about it, say it's a chalois candle, which has enough to last, that's all that matters. And if there's some external issue that's going to make it not last, even if that's 100%, but it's an external issue, so then I could have heard a svar that could say, still, that's okay, that's a candle. And even though we know the problem is going to be there, but still, when the problem happens, it's an external problem that shouldn't disqualify your lighting. So that's a fair thing to think. And there might be a few who would agree with you. But nonetheless, many of the Gedolei Acharonim took this position that that's a problem, that that's as if you don't have enough oil, you don't have enough wick, you don't have a shot in life, if you're lighting in such a place when you know it's going to go out. In fact, there's some who ask them the question the other way around. So let's say in Eretz Yisrael, for example, where it's more popular to light outside. So let's say it is windy outside. So you're going to light outside, and right after you light, you're going to take a glass dome or a glass box and put it on top of the menorah so it's going to protect it from the wind. So there, it will last, hopefully, it should last. But at the moment you're lighting, there's an argument to be made that maybe that lighting is no good because the way it is right now, it can't last. You have to come in and change the situation to make it last. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that if you light without enough oil, and then you add oil later, that's no good. That was still considered to be inadequate lighting. So maybe we should say also, lighting outside where it's windy, even though a minute later you're going to intervene in a way that will preserve it, that will make it last, maybe still, that's like adding oil later. So that, to most of the poskim, are makel on for one reason or another, but it's just interesting what that reflects. That here we have now two levels of problem. One, if it doesn't have enough potential to last in the first place, inherently, because there's inadequate oil or wicks or whatever it is. Or a second situation where the candle itself is complete, but there are external factors that you know will result in an impossibility of the candle lasting, that's also a problem. So now you can notch it up a third level, and you could say, what if your candle is fine, has all the oil you could need, as long as the wick as you could need, the candle itself is 100% qualified to last. And the external physical circumstances could also sustain a candle. You don't have tremendous winds coming at you. But you know that you plan definitely on extinguishing. You have a wedding to get to, you have somewhere to go, you cannot stay home for more than 5 minutes, and you're not going to leave your house with a menorah lit and no one's home, which is a wise thing to avoid. So you're not gonna let it last more than 5 minutes. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others felt that's also no good. Right? That if you know that you're gonna extinguish it, so that is comparable to not having enough oil, even though you could argue it's two steps removed. But those two steps may not have halachic significance, and it could be that that's also not going to be sufficient. Now, it's a very subtle point, because let's say you light the menorah, fully expecting it to last, and you have enough oil and everything, and after 2 minutes you say, you know what, I'm tired of this, I just got a call, somebody invited me out for dinner, I want to go, and you decide to extinguish it after 3 minutes. Is that good? So that was a machlokas. We know if it goes out on its own after 3 minutes, we say for sure it is good. But what if it went out because you put it out on purpose? So that's a machlokas. That may or may not be good. But here we're saying it's worse than that. It's not just that you did it on purpose, but that you knew from the beginning you were going to do it on purpose. That's where the issue is. It's less about purpose or not on purpose, or you or someone else, but more about the fact that you knew from the beginning that it wasn't going to last. So it says Rav Asher Weiss, when you light on an airplane, there is no way that it's going to last a half hour. Either the Homeland Security people, when they take you away, either they're going to make you put it out, or they're going to put it out themselves. But either way, two things are happening. It's getting extinguished, and now, for the next 6 months, everybody who gets on an airplane is going to be searched for candles as they go through security. So, you know, it's not going to last. Right? So, if that's the case, so he says, it's not even shy. It's not even possible to fulfill the mitzvah that way. We can make a bracha on it. Highly unadvised also is going into the bathrooms and disabling the smoke detector and lighting there. There's about 100 reasons why that is a horrible idea. Right? So that's also something that you're not going to do. So in addition, the third reason he gives, I'm skipping the second reason for a second, but the third reason is that it's gazel and sakana, it's incredibly dangerous, and it is something which is against the airline's rules, and therefore it's gazel also. And one doesn't have the right to ever assume for himself if something is considered to be a sakana, well, I can manage it, it won't be a sakana. The whole reason for rules of sakana are that everyone has to follow them, even if they think they can manage without it. And therefore, That's already going to be a conclusive point. But together with that, he says point number two is that a person who's in an airplane doesn't have a bias. Right now, you're not in a bias, you don't have a bias. So if there's no bias, so that means you're unprejudiced. I mean, it means that you don't have a context in which to light Ner Chanukah, and therefore you are pater for that reason. Okay, so if that's the case, that's another reflection of this whole issue. Now it's true, as he and others note, that in earlier generations, some discussed, such as the Marshan and the Aruch HaShulchan, discussed lighting on a train. But, as he notes, and Rav Yosha makes a similar point, that the trains they're talking about are not comparable to our airplanes. There they had a sleeping car, they had a whole section that was theirs and identifiable as connected to them. While on an airplane, you're in a cramped seat and you don't have anything beyond that, and they could move you from one seat to the next, and no one would say that that's comparable to what you have on a train. So Harrison's wondering, what if I have a super first-class kind of situation where I do have, right? So then, okay, then when that problem comes up, come to me and I'll be happy to join you. Sorry?
It's come up.
Okay, so you've been in that situation?
I personally.
Okay, so tell you, people who have this situation should come and we'll discuss it. But, sorry?
That's for a friend.
Okay, so introduce me to this friend and we'll travel places together. But, that would only maybe affect this part of the equation. The other parts of the equation are still going to be there. But among the issues of bias, the planes for most of us are presumably not in that type of a situation. Hi.
So, theoretically, I've heard it quoted, I think in Rishon's name, that you can light...
Rishon Zaman? Yeah.
Like a flashlight.
Your first person on basis.
Could work.
Yeah, so... right. Yes, I understand. The rest of us are on a first and middle name basis. Okay, so... so I think that is practically a good suggestion. We don't have time right now, if we want to get to Mincha, to discuss this in full detail, but many poskim are opposed to electric candles for the menorah for various reasons, which we can discuss maybe at a future date. But it's probably the case most of those would agree, well, not all, but most would agree that if you have no way of lighting an actual flame, that the electric lights are better than nothing. So therefore, it's probably a good suggestion, if you have no other way, and you don't have a family at home with lighting on your behalf, which already would again address the issue, so with somebody who's flying without the family members at home, that maybe you should take a flashlight, just one candle, because the Iker Mitzvah is one candle, and turn on the flashlight for a half hour. That you probably could get away with, and that might qualify or might be better than nothing as far as counting as an Ner Chanukah. Some of these posts can point out, I think a flashlight is better than an electric menorah that's plugged into a wall, or a battery operated electric menorah is better than one that's plugged into a wall, because within those two, maybe there's an edge to something which is battery powered, because then at least the fuel source, so to speak, is contained within the light, as opposed to if it's plugged into the wall, then there's still nothing that can stand in for Shemin that is there, and all of the power is being supplied from an outside source. They're those who draw such a distinction. So probably if one is flying over the course of Hanukkah, doesn't have family members at home lighting for him, that maybe that's the best suggestion. Erickson.
The reason of bias is that a one enough reason to not, like, if you, like, you own your own thing? Like,
if what?
If you're borrowing your friend's pen, so it's not your pen, so we can't count that as a bias.
As opposed to the rest of us who are flying our own pen. Right.
And to take out all the other external issues of, like, rules and sakana.
Right. Sakana still is.
So, like, if you somehow eliminate that issue.
Right.
Turn a box or whatever. Would the fact that it's not a bias be enough to just pop through your mental?
It might, yeah, it might make it impossible for you, it might make it more of an onus. Now, so then there's a discussion from Poskim have, which even if that's true, maybe still you shouldn't put yourself in that situation, so maybe you shouldn't fly then, and you should avoid the situation. So that's the discussion. There's more to say about this, and certainly more to say about the whole Chovas Habayis issue, but we should have mincha, so we'll do that now. And God willing, tomorrow, where are you holding Amar Mekomos in terms of the chinuch? I can give you some more, but where's everyone holding? Okay, so what's the deal? We know what the story is from the Shura on Wednesday. Who's around on Wednesday? It's close to the Shura today. Okay, anyone else?